This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to Best of the Rest, an indie comics podcast. I'm Jay Loving. This week we have a special episode in store for you. I had the privilege recently of being asked to participate in a roundtable discussion on the Comics Alternative podcast in recognition of International Podcast Day 2018. There were several of us from a diversity of different comics podcasts, and we discussed a variety of topics, including how we came to do what we do, some of the challenges of creating our podcast, such as that. It was a very good conversation, I think, and Derek Royal, the producer and host of the Comics Alternative, was kind enough to give me permission to use the content for Best of the Rest, and I'd like to present that to you now. Enjoy.
Wow, we have a great roundtable lined up. This is a special episode of not only the Comics Alternative, but other potential podcasts, because I'm talking with a variety of other podcasters who do podcasts about comics, and I wanted to pull together a variety of comics podcasters and talk about the podcast medium for International Podcast Day today, September 30th. Joining me is Gina Gagliano, Greg Matesevich, Gwen Tarbox, and Jay Loving. Guys, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks, Derek.
Doing well.
Yeah, doing great.
And probably a really good way to start is for each of you to talk a little bit about your comics podcast and where to find it. So, Gina, you want to start the ball rolling?
Sure. My name's Gina Gagliano, and I co-host a podcast with Allison Wilgus that's called Graphic Novel TK. The overarching mission of Graphic Novel TK is that it's a discussion of how the graphic novel publishing industry works. My co-host Allison is amazing, and the podcast is bi-weekly. The episode is next week, and it's about production and book production and how that works. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, cool. Look forward to hearing that. Greg, tell us about Robots from Tomorrow.
Okay. Fingers crossed this actually works. Hi, my name is Greg Matesevich. I co-host a podcast called Robots from Tomorrow with Mike Romeo. We are at the Multiversity Podcast Network. You can find us at multiversitycomics.com. We also have our own website. We do two episodes a week, a shorter sort of pull list episode for what's coming out that week, and then kind of a longer discussion freeform episode on Thursday, and the first ones are on Monday. We aren't really we have a lot of different interests in comics, and I don't feel that we're really disciplined enough to focus on one. So we try and cover sort of anything that interests us in comics. So that can range from like manga to superheroes to, you know, comics adaptations to like industry sort of kind of inside baseball sort of stuff that maybe doesn't interest the, you know, the audience as a whole, but certainly, you know, interests us. We also like sort of nerd out about like paper formats and publishing formats and stuff. So we really, both through design and by default, try and talk about as much sort of comic stuff and whatever interesting us about comics at any particular time. So yeah, it's kind of a wide ranging show.
Okay. And Jay.
Yes. Jay Loving, and I co-host Best of the Rest, an indie comics podcast, along with my podcast partner, Dennis Chandler. And we are on part of the Nerdy Legion podcast network. You can find us at nerdylegion.com/podcasts/BOTR. And as the name implies, we focus primarily on independent comics. I like to say that we're similar to the Comics Alternative, but far less cogent and self-disciplined.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the assumption of our coherence is probably more of a fiction than anything. And speaking of the comics alternative, Gwen, the mastermind behind the Young Readers series.
That's right. I'm really excited. This is the third year of the Young Reader show on the Comics Alternative. And actually, that's how I got to know Gina, because when she was working at First Second, she was my go-to person for comics to review. And I'm excited now to be able to work with her when she is doing her series at Random. And yeah, I think that next month we're going to have a really exciting show with a new co-host. And so things are going really well over in our part of the Comics Alternative universe.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm Derek, one of the co-hosts and the producer of the Comics Alternative. And, you know, one of the reasons why I asked each of you to be a part of this roundtable discussion is I wanted diversity. I mean, we've done shows before for International Podcast Day, but I think this is the most diverse gathering we've ever had. So, I know that, you know, Gina with Graphic Novel TK, you're looking at the world of comics and comics production primarily from a publisher's perspective, not only, but I think that, you know, that's something that I think the rest of us, if not are ignorant about, then we just don't discuss. I mean, we don't have that background. You know, both Jay and Greg, I mean, you guys not only are part of a network, which is something that for all practical purposes, the Comics Alternative isn't a part of. But you also deal with a diversity of titles, especially with Robots from Tomorrow. I mean, one of the things I really appreciate about what you guys do, Greg, what you and Mike do, is that you talk about not only mainstream material, but you also bring in a lot of indie stuff or alternative, whatever you want to call it. And then, Jay, now you say that you talk primarily about indie titles, but you know, I was listening the other day and you guys had a Batman show.
Yes, we did. like I say, this is where I come in and say we're far less self-disciplined than secret that Dennis and I both are big Batman collectors, and him far much more than I am, and so we end up almost always start talking about what auctions one of us has looked at or found. And a lot of times I'll just leave that. I won't edit that out of the podcast. I'll just leave it in there. So we end up having a diversity of topics. So.
And then, you know, of course, Gwen, with the Young Reader series of the Comics Alternative, I mean, you look at a kind of text that I think most comics podcasters overlook, maybe with the exception of comics podcasts that are maybe library based.
Right. A lot of librarians do podcasts. So do comics journalists. There are some comics journalists who are working with children's literature broadly. I'm thinking of Bridget Elverson, who does such great work. She has, at least in the past, with Publishers Weekly and School Library Journal. I believe she has a new blog, actually, that focuses on perhaps not entirely on children's comics, but she does a lot with children's comics. But yeah, we're pretty much unique right now in terms of podcasting. There are a lot of blogs, you're right, and many of them, again, it's, you know, librarians are constantly trying to, you know, keep up with the thousands of books that come out every year. And, you know, even within children's comics, the number of books that have been published has just grown exponentially every year, really, for the last 10 or 15 years. So it's so difficult to keep up with what's coming out. So honestly, I wish there were more podcasts. Hopefully there will be more in the future. So.
Well, actually, this leads me to one of the first questions I wanted to throw out to you guys is how was it coming up with a particular niche? Or maybe the lack of a particular niche within the, let's say, comics podcasting community. Because as we know, I mean, there are tons of podcasts out there about comics in one form or another. So where do you find your place? How did you get to where you are?
So I can start off talking about Graphic Novel TK. And I think that the podcast that Allison and I do really came out of the fact that we both get a lot of questions about how the publishing industry works. And we thought that the best format to kind of demystify that would be to do interviews with people, which is easier to do in a podcast form if you're talking to people from a literally an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it was less us wanting to do a podcast and looking at the podcasting community than us seeing a need to help people and figuring out that possibly a podcast was the best way to do that.
I kind of fell into it. I answered an ad at my local comic shop about a guy and a couple of friends who were starting a podcast. And I basically just sort of joined the discussion and wanted to talk about comics and have been sort of talking about comics, kind of ever since.
So you knew, Greg, that the people that began working with you initially knew that you wanted to cover the broad spectrum of comics and not just limit yourself to a particular kind of comic.
Actually, it was sort of the reverse. It was much more of a mainstream. The original show that I sort of started with was much more sort of mainstream focused. And it was a show that Mike came on to later. And we sort of discovered that we like talking about the mainstream stuff, but we also like talking about other things. And so we went from that show to Robots. We sort of formulated Robots of being like, well, we're going to need to talk about something consistently for, hopefully quite a while. What can we talk about that we're interested in? And that tended to be, a little bit of everything. So we we kind of figured out the show and then sort of saw what niche it fell into, maybe sort of like any given, in some way, sort of any given show can kind of be maybe categorized a couple of different ways. Like, this is more like, okay, we're doing a Marvel show today. We're going to talk about, like Marvel Knights or something, but then we'll go to manga. And then, when things are running well, like we'll do, like Marvel, then manga, and then, like nonfiction, journalist comics and sort of back and forth. And we try to consciously sort of jump around genre wise just because it keeps it interesting for ourselves, because we have to, find something hopefully interesting to say for people. It's got to be interesting for us first. So, yeah, did that come close to answering your question?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Jay?
Well, kind of like Greg, I sort of, and to use somewhat pedestrian language, I kind of fell ass backwards into podcasting myself. I was friends with this group of guys who had originally kind of gotten together as Valiant fans for the Valiant Comics. Mm-hmm. And Martin Ferretti, who is one of the founders of the Nerdy Legion Network, he was doing a podcast, and some others started coming in, and some of the guys just started creating podcasts for their own interests. We have one for DC Comics, another for Marvel. There's an Aftershock podcast and some various others, even some non-comic book related podcasts. And a friend of mine just suggested that I and Dennis should start a comic podcast that focused specifically on more widespread discussion of indie comics. So that's kind of how we started on it.
Now, I know with the Comics Alternative, we knew from the very beginning we wanted to focus on non-superhero, non-mainstream, non-DC or Marvel superhero stuff. So technically, given our mission, we can talk about DC and Marvel as long as it's not superhero, or we can talk about superhero as long as it's not DC or Marvel. And we've done that in the past. Actually, I think of all the shows that we do, the two series that we have that would allow us, I think, to talk about the superhero mainstream stuff would be our On Location show, which now I record twice a month at Heroes Aren't Hard to Find in Charlotte. And even conceivably, I don't think this has ever been done, Gwen, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that it would be possible to discuss a superhero title for the Young Reader show. Like, for instance, something like a Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, right. Or Miles Morales or some of the other ones that have been so popular. And in fact, I'm sort of excited because our new co-host, Crystal Howard, is very much into sort of that kind of comic stuff. So I think she's going to bring some of that to our show, which I'm excited about. Actually, right now, I'm just reading a Batman comic because I was thinking one of you were saying you were doing Batman recently about Batman and Robin trying to solve the mystery of Paul being dead and the Beatles. So all this week I have been, well, I'm doing one of my a book chapter for something that I will eventually write, and I'm writing a proposal for right now, involves the Beatles and children's comics, or in comics that, you know, are geared towards kids. And it turns out there's a ton of them. And so I was, when you were talking about doing a Batman show, I was thinking, huh, this is a Batman expert and a collector. Maybe he has a copy of this. So anyway, but yeah, I think that's much more applicable, especially though, because also Marvel and Image especially are working really hard to start to try and jump into that children's market that's so vibrant at the graphic novel level. And I could, you know, you can really see how there's now sort of more of an overlap with sort of, you know, mainstream publishers doing children's comics, but also now, you know, comic book publishers. So it's really such an exciting time. And Gina knows this far better than I do, but it's just an exciting time to be working on children's comics, because the definition of children's comics is so broad, which I think it should be, by the way. So,
you know, one of the reasons why I ask you guys about, you know, your niches and any decisions that you made toward the beginning or even later about what kind of comics podcast you would have is something that I think about every now and again, because I am sometimes painfully aware that by deciding to not discuss mainstream superhero stuff, and we knew this from the very beginning, that we would be limiting our audience. And that becomes very clear to me when I look at and compare, let's say, our Patreon campaign to the Patreon campaigns of other podcasts that primarily deal with the mainstream superhero universes. Many more supporters. But again, we knew this going in. And I guess that leads me to another question, and that is, I guess, dealing with things like audience or download numbers, if you want to look at it that way, and even the possibilities of monetization. I mean, is monetization anything that the rest of you consider in your podcast, or do you do it purely out of just a love and devotion for comics?
Money is nice, but clearly Mike and I don't move to the whims of like trying to make money off of the show, because if we did, like, our content list would be completely different. In terms of I feel like there are better, Mike and I just sort of aren't, our collaboration and the way we sort of work together and the way this sort of works, it doesn't necessarily, I feel like, lend itself to being the most sort of like mainstream type of show. Like, we have to talk about what interests us, and so that takes us down various rabbit holes, which is fun, but it can be kind of not as sort of upfront and maybe as short and snappy or whatever as a more mainstream podcast. So, I mean, we didn't really sort of talked about it, but I feel like we both kind of understood that, like, monetization beyond a certain, I mean, we have a sponsor, and that's nice, and that covered, you know, they've been very sort of good to us, but in terms of, like, actually, you know, having this be like any sort of like the revenue generating or some sort of, it's all we wanted was to be self-sustaining, and we've got that. And so we basically are allowed to do what it is that we want to do. And I guess what we want to do is to sort of go all over the place. And it's really tough to you know, I guess sort of monetize that. Mm.
Yeah. With Graphic Novel TK, Allison and I have a very specific audience that we're interested in reaching with Graphic Novel TK. And that audience is aspiring comics creators, current comics creators, people who aspire to work in comics publishing and who currently work in comics publishing. Mm. I've worked with some other podcasts, things like The Adventure Zone, like Live Play D&D podcast. So the potential audiences are different. The people who might be interested in consuming Graphic Novel TK, the ways to monetize it would be potentially packaging it as a course lesson for a comics college rather than looking at merchandise.
So how many of you have Patreon campaigns?
Not me.
Not me.
We don't.
Nope.
Wow. So
we do. Well,
so yeah, the Comics Alternative is the only one that has a Patreon. Yeah. You know, this whole thing about monetization, it's secondary when it comes to at least my desires for podcasting, but it's something that I nonetheless think about on a fairly regular basis. And I try to have different revenues or streams of revenues coming in because I know one is not going to do it. You know, Greg, like you guys, we do have a sponsor and that's something, but it's not that much. So we have a Patreon campaign that brings in something, but not that much. But we also have associate accounts with both Amazon and mycomicshop.com, and each of them bring in something, but not that much. So if you get all of those not that muches together, you know, we can sustain ourselves and put away some savings for things like conferences and or conventions, maybe equipment here or there as we need it. But yeah, we're definitely not making a living doing this. Although I do think that there are some podcasts out there that are much more successful at generating revenue given their focus and the kind of comics that they discuss.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that I have a very good comics-related job that pays for a whole lot of things for me personally, so I can afford to kind of do this as a – I enjoy organizing things and talking to people sort of – project.
That is a nice benefit to have.
Yes.
Also, another perspective, at least from what I'm coming from, as being part of a network, and we're very tightly woven in. It's like I'm not sure. I've not done a study on how other podcast networks are structured, but we do everything through central technology. Martin, like I said, one of the co-founders, he is our technical person. He sets everything up. We all go through the same platform. All the cost of that is paid for by the network. And yeah, we do have a sponsor. So I was trying to, if we try to do any monetization, I feel like we would first try to do that as a network as a whole. I wouldn't feel right trying to monetize my podcast outside of, just on my own. Outside of the other shows of the network.
Yeah, that's something that I think both Jay and Greg, you guys have to think about in ways that the rest of us don't. Well, I guess technically the Comics Alternative, or at least one of its series, our On Location shows at Heroes, we're now part of a network. It's the Queen City Podcast Network. And so my co-host for that show, Mike Cobray, and I go into Heroes twice a month and do an on-location show where we talk between the two of us, we talk to customers, we talk to shop employees about the things that they're reading and what they're excited about. But because that series is based in a Charlotte area business, it's only that show, that series, that is a part of the Queen City Podcast Network. But everything else that the Comics Alternative does is not a part of any network. So I really don't have to deal with the kind of things that, let's say, Greg and Jay, you guys do, as being part of like the Nerdy Legion or Multiversity. I'm curious, have you found working within a network constricting in any way, or maybe even, opening things up for more possibility than if you guys did it on your own?
I feel like it's opened up. I feel like it's opened up a lot of possibilities. So we're part of the Multiversity, the Multiversity Podcast Network. Multiversity being a site primarily means that we're I don't feel like it's a network in sort of the traditional sense of like it only exists as this sort of confederacy of podcasts, so we actually sort of came to Multiversity at the on the previous show and then switched it over when we started doing robots. So it seems like it's like a win-win situation. Like Multiversity and the podcast network and all the other podcasts and stuff are there for us to be with and for us to sort of interact with, but there's no, they don't tell us what to do. You know, like Brian, our editor, point person, like he's there for comments. He's there for suggestions. You know, he comes on the show every once in a while. We go on, you know, various other shows, but he's not saying, hey, we need you guys to cover, you know, the Batman wedding issue, right? We need you guys to do that. Which is fantastic because that's Mike and I may cover probably not something necessarily that specific, but it's better for us to come to those topics sort of organically as opposed to being like assigned them. And I feel like if we were in a different type of network, there would actually be sort of like constraints. So we get all the benefits of being, you know, in this group without actually having to sort of constrain ourselves to like, you know, you guys, we need you to cover this or we need you to, you know, we need you to do that. So it's it's pretty good. It's the way to go. I recommend it.
Yeah. Nerdy Legion. It's hard to describe. We're a network, but we're mostly just friends. That's kind of how we got started. And so it's been very supportive to me. I wouldn't be able to do this without being able to call on some of these other guys because I didn't know the first thing about podcasting. So no, not constricting at all. In fact, it has given me ideas and ways to hopefully get better at podcasting. But like I said, we're not really a strict network. We're mostly just a bunch of knuckleheads that like comic books and do our podcasts.
In fact, Jay, I think one of your fellow Nerdy Legion podcasters, is it Jack Sutherland?
Yes.
Yeah, he's here in Charlotte.
Yes, he lives in that area.
Yeah, I met him at Heroes, in fact, a number of months ago. So that was interesting. And, you know, the reason I'm asking about the whole network thing is I had wondered at some point, like years ago, if maybe I should attempt to seek out a network to be a part of, but I didn't know necessarily how I would benefit or what kind of maybe reciprocal agreement we needed to make with one another. But, you know, oh, I mean, outside of the fact that our on location at Heroes Aren't Hard to Find is now part of the Queen City Podcast Network, other shows with the Comics Alternative, we have just grown over the past few years to the point that in essence, we're kind of like a de facto network, right? Mm-hmm. But we've been calling it the Comics Alternative family of podcasts. So not necessarily a network, but we have our weekly review show, which is what we started with. Then we spun our interview series off into its own series. And then over the past 6 years, we've started a number of monthly shows like on manga, on web comics, European comics in translation, and what Gwen does with the Young Reader Show. And so it's gotten to where there's not just one Comics Alternative, but there are a variety of different shows. Because I know what, Gwen, you do with the Young Reader Show is very different from what we do with many of the other series. So it's almost as if you know, like if you guys had your own feed, you'd be a completely separate podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're thinking about, I think, a slightly different audience. You know, we're thinking about our colleagues in children's literature and library science who are working with children's literature as much as we are thinking about comics readers in general, just general comics readers. And I think that adds a different dimension to our show. And also we really don't know who's listening to our show in terms of their age. You know, this is a subject matter where, you know, we know that some kids listen to our podcast because some of my friends' children do. And so we're always sort of walking that line in terms of even like if we're going to talk about something that is, you know, kind of YA oriented and maybe involves some pretty intense discussion, we'll often like in the middle of the podcast, we'll say, okay, parents, if you're listening with your kids now or kids, you know, make sure mom and dad are okay with you listening to this part, or we'll just point that out. So I think, Derek, that's the other big difference, is that we know that some kids at least are listening to our podcast. So it's just a slightly different thing than what you're doing in the mainstream shows that you do. So yeah,
I have to make sure to mark all of your episodes as not explicit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We try, but sometimes we fail.
Well, you know, Gwen, something that you said leads me to another question I had for everyone. And that is, you talked about not being entirely sure of the audience. I mean, I'm curious if the rest of you are not necessarily concerned. Maybe that's not the best way to put it, but, are you interested in, do you keep up with, do you try to find out who may be listening? Or, and I know that that's difficult when it comes to podcasting, or maybe another way of asking this is, do you keep up with your download numbers or do you care?
I mean, I care in like the general sense. I'd like people to be listening. I kind of, yeah, a couple of times a year, I'll sort of pop in and really kind of look at the numbers and just sort of see like how we're trending, you know? But other than sort of taking like a broad snapshot every once in a while and being like, okay, we're, you know, this may be working or maybe not, especially if we do like a different, some sort of big change or something like, you know, bringing on a sponsor or some sort of large, you know, shift, I'll sort of keep an eye on it for a little bit. But other than that, and this may just be me personally, I really try not to think about it. I try to keep it like as simple as possible in that, like, I want to talk about comics. I sit here in my little, you know, studio. I talk with Mike. We talk about comics. We keep it sort of as in the moment as possible because it's really easy for me to get distracted and yeah, it's hard enough for me to stay focused anyway, I guess. And you know, once these things get quantified into like actual numbers and stuff, those numbers can be good, but then you're always thinking, well, maybe they can be better, you know, or it's really easy to fall down that rabbit hole. And I'm just like, nope. Are we still being downloaded? Yes. We haven't like completely tanked. No? Okay, good. I'll check back in 6 months. Like that's about as much as I can handle.
So with Graphic Novel TK, the point of our podcast is to be useful for people. So we look at downloads. We also look at social media comments. We have a dedicated Twitter. So we look at responses to our episodes. We look at retweets and likes for episode sharing. You know, we also get some listener email with questions. We just did our first Q&A episode with questions from people about publishing. So we try to keep tabs on our listeners, but not in a kind of how many hundred people, how many thousand people downloaded this episode, but is this something that people seem to be interacting with and using in a way that's useful and reasonable? And one of the benefits to getting to go to a lot of conventions, do a lot of comics industry events is that sometimes I'll go to an event and then have people that I don't know come up to me and say, I really like your podcast. So that's always really great too.
Cool.
I'm sorry.
Just something really quick. One of the other benefits of being on a network, so to speak, is that I'm horrible with social media. And we have our like daily, not daily tweets, but like every time we tweet out or every time we publish an episode, we have Kate Kostersky, who's part of Multiversity. She handles a lot of our social media stuff. So she's really good about making sure that there's, you know, a tweet when the episode goes out and then, you know, like a follow up tweet and really staying on the ball with that sort of stuff. So, you know, membership and sort of larger groups comes with or can come with like support staff, and that's wonderful. So
yeah, we also have it's set where whenever an episode is published, it generates automatically a tweet mm-hmm. for our sub. But you know, we have pretty extensive analytics. I don't look at them that often because it's not a huge concern of mine. I mean, the numbers are, you know, I don't know how to interpret them because I don't do a lot of research into finding out what, you know, some of these top most popular podcasts are getting. I'm sure our numbers would look pale compared to them. So I don't know. I look at these numbers and I think, okay, a good number of people are listening, But also at the end of every episode, I give my Twitter handle, Dennis gives his, and I give the one for the podcast. And I think I can count on one hand the number of tweets we've actually gotten. In fact, recently, a couple months ago, we interviewed David Pipoz and Jorge Santiago, who are the creators of Spencer and Locke. And they offered to give out two signed copies of the trade paperback. And we just said, okay, the first two people to tweet us gets this copy. Didn't get a single tweet.
Yeah.
Didn't get one single tweet.
You know, that is, I know, something that my original co-host, Andy Kunkka, and I had worried about at the beginning. When we first started the Comics Alternative, we were self-hosting, and so I was really uncertain in terms of, like, legitimate download numbers and whatnot. I mean, now we're with Libsyn, so, I mean, they provide not only great support, but also tons of analytics. And I'd highly recommend them as a podcast host. But we were wondering if maybe we were like voices in the desert. So, we were podcasting, but hardly anyone was listening, which I know wasn't the case. Now I have a better sense of what kind of shows tend to get downloaded more often than not. Gwen, I think I've told you this before, but I have noticed that the Young Reader series seem to get more downloads than on average than most of our regular review episodes, our weekly review shows. The monthly preview show that we do always gets more downloads than some of the other shows that we do. And so, sometimes things like that make sense to me. I mean, I can understand why there are a lot of downloads for the Young Reader show, for our preview shows. But then other times we get some shows that have just gigantic spikes. Like, for example, last week's review show that went up on Wednesday of last week, and we looked at A Contract with God Curator's Collection, Liz Suburbia's Egg Cream number one, and then Howard Chaykin's Hey Kids Comics, the first two issues. I don't think it had anything to do with the titles that we discussed, but we had a really big spike in downloads for that particular episode. Now, part of it, I think, may be due to the fact that it was the very first show with my new co-host for that show, Sturgios Batsakis. And I think that that's the reason why there was such a spike. But I don't know. Maybe all of a sudden a lot of Eisner fans just latched onto that episode and started downloading it. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I can't make heads or tails of what kind of trends that I may see. But I do try, maybe a little too much, to pay attention to the download numbers just to see what might work, what might not. I'm also the social media guy. And I try to keep up with all the social media stuff, like tweeting out, going on Instagram, posting on Facebook. I don't know how much that helps. I've heard other professional podcasters say that tweeting out or posting on a variety of social media platforms is a good way of letting the audience that you already have know that you have episodes out, but it's probably not very effective in terms of gaining audience.
I don't know.
It depends on what you do, right? I mean, posting something on your social media where you have followers is a good way of alerting your current audience to the fact that things are up. But the good thing about social media is that the way it's constructed, it provides the opportunity for sharing, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. those spikes can come from people who are already your audience finding something so funny or exciting or engaging that they have to share it, which then can lead to kind of a contagious effect.
And it really does help, at least for us, when we interview someone and that interview subject has, let's say, for example, a large Twitter following. And so if they tweet out, hey, I was on this podcast, give it a listen, then that helps us. And we may gain, I don't know, 2, 3 or a few more subscribers. Or we could have people just check out the first few minutes of the interview and then never come back to the podcast ever again. But, at least there's a little bit of growth when someone does that, tweets out that they were on the show.
Yeah, that's definitely the case for Allison and I too, where, you know, having people, every episode for us is an interview. So having those people share it, having sometimes their publishers share it is really valuable.
And I also think that's the power of Twitter. You know, a lot of times Twitter is the place I'll go, like, just before I'm going to sleep, to just kind of go through, like you're saying, and look at what my friends are looking at and stuff like that. And that's where I find a lot of the podcast titles that I'm interested in listening to. So and also I think, again, a lot of it is audience. There's not a lot of competition out there for a show that is focusing on comics for young readers, or a show that's talking about, you know, getting into publishing in the way that you're doing it. And I think that, but that can sometimes be good too, though, because when you're in a niche, if one person listens to it, then, like, I often will tag people on Facebook, usually around 100 of my colleagues in Children's Lit. I mean, right there, when they pop stuff up on Twitter, then that's like a lot of people who are talking about the show. So, you know, even though we're a small little universe, there's a lot of passionate interest in the subject.
Definitely. Kids comics are the best, obviously.
We know that.
The new mainstream.
You know, another question I wanted to throw out to you guys is what you think of as, I guess, a challenge of discussing on an audio podcast a medium that is largely visual.
It can be tough. It depends. I was thinking, Paul Lai, a colleague of I guess Derek and I, for his show, particularly like Comic Syllabus and stuff, he did a really good job of having like visual accompaniment in the show notes. You know, he'll talk about something on the show, and then he'll be like, "I'll have a picture of this in the, you know, the show notes." If I were a better podcaster, I would try and utilize that more. So at least there is some sort of, you know, visual reference point if Mike and I talk about if we're breaking down something specifically. Because we try and do that as much as we can when we're talking about specific books. I know one time relatively recently we were talking about, it was one of our weekly episodes, we were talking about The Creeps, which is a sort of EC homage magazine. And then that got him off on a tangent if he actually had an old issue of Creepy. And there was an Alex Toth story in there. And we were able to, like, we opened up Google and Google searched some of the images because we were talking about Toth's use of light and dark and sort of shadow on top of shadow. Like, how is he able to have a night scene that has a person's shadow in it when they're outside and it's lit by the moon? I mean, it's like a really, you know, it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. So we'd have to, in that case, to sort of specifically say, hey, Google this particular search, you will get this image and you can, you know, you can follow along. Or we just, I guess, try and be as descriptive as possible to sort of paint the mental picture for somebody who's driving, obviously, and listening to our podcast. Like, don't try and Google while you're behind the wheel. That sort of goes without saying, but just FYI, don't, you know, wait till you get home. It'll still be there. Trust me. But that's something I think as we've done it more and more, we try and get better at, and we also, it sort of forces us to increase our vocabulary and our comfort with talking about sort of artist terms. Like, Mike is more of an artist than I am. I have like no art background at all. Like, I can barely draw a straight line with a ruler. So, but learning that you don't have to be an artist to be able to talk in sort of artist terms, if you put enough sort of work into it, was one of like the early kind of either early podcast revelations for me or sort of pre-podcast, you know, revelations that you can read interviews. And I like reading interviews with artists and sort of hear them talk about craft. And I just pick up, vocabulary and just steal from them completely so that I can then sort of find the words to describe what it is that they're putting on the page. So it's fun, but it can be sort of a constant challenge to try and, you know, bring the visual through an audio medium, I guess.
Yeah, the visual is less a concern for us with Graphic Novel TK because our episodes are more focused on things like what do agents do or where do the blurbs on books come from than the kind of the craft of making comics. It's all kind of about the like logistics, practical process.
The thing I struggle with mightily is if I'm trying to describe or give a sense of what a particular artist's style is like, because there's no good words for that. And I am trained myself a little bit. I draw, I do some painting, so I'm familiar with art, but even then it's hard to come up with words. I mean, somebody will say, well, his style is very cartoony. Well, what the hell does that mean, really, cartoony? And so I find more often than not that I will try to give the name of maybe a more well-known artist whose style is similar. I'll say, okay, well, his work or her work is reminiscent of, say, a Sean Murphy or, you know, Tula Lote, whoever. But yeah, that's a constant struggle with me, is trying to give a sense of what the art style looks like.
Yeah. The shorthanding is difficult. It's also interesting to hear like what people, I'll look at something and I think that, you know, somebody is, you know, like they're like a Chris Somney or, you know, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. The guy that did Flash Gordon with Jeff Parker, Doc Shaner. Oh my God. Okay. So like they're in that like Chris Somney, Doc Shaner thing. And you're like, okay, well, you know, but they're also very much in the like Alex Toth school. So it's interesting to hear people, like who people reference in terms of referencing other artists and how far back they go. Like, do they go one generation? Do they go two? Do they go three? Because, you know, interesting art has no time limit. Like there's no statute of limitations on good art. So you can look at, you know, art from different, you know, generations and see, you know, some artists improving on being from a certain school, but maybe sort of an earlier generation, you know, sort of that quote school, unquote, is doing something that sort of got lost in kind of the middle generation, but somebody later is picking it up. So it's a challenge to be able to try and talk about that sort of stuff. 'Cause I feel like that's where Mike and I really, I mean, hopefully that's something we're getting better at, but that's something we both sort of gravitate towards. And it's a challenge to sort of do it well and try to come up with not only descriptive ways of doing it, but also like different ways of saying it, as opposed to, oh, that person's like Mike Mignola. And you're like, okay, well, apparently everybody you look at seems to be like Mike Mignola, 'cause you have like a type of stuff that you like. And then even sort of playing off of, you know, what are, I guess this is sort of a larger question of, since we don't really have necessarily a particular niche, we sort of go where we're interested in, but that does tend to put us into certain like go-tos. And in some ways you want to like encourage that, because it helps you hopefully get smarter and more well-read and hopefully more better spoken about these particular things, about these particular areas. But you also hopefully are trying to counter program against that at least a little bit, because otherwise you're just going to be, you know, the Mignola podcast or the Chris Claremont X-Men podcast, as it very well could be, if sort of left to my own devices. But there's Explain the X-Men, which already does that wonderfully. So I try and steer, you know, other ways. But I mean, do you, I guess for those of you, I mean, do you find that to be a concern of sort of maybe sticking on a certain subject area a little too much, or trying to sort of counter program, or how do you guys sort of deal with that, I guess?
Well, I know on the Comics Alternative, one of the things that we will do occasionally is, I guess, similar to what you were describing, Greg, and that is to use as a point of example other artists whose work may reflect what we're trying to get across. I don't know how successful we are at that. I mean, I think more times than not, though, we attempt to describe the art, maybe even lamely, in ways that we think listeners can get some kind of visual from. So, for example, you know, Jay, you mentioned a little while ago the word cartoony, and what the hell does that mean? And I think that that is a word that can mean different things. It can be positive or pejorative or even neutral, depending on someone's conception of what cartoony actually might mean. I know every time I use the word cartoony, and I've done it often in describing a certain kind of art, I think most times I will contextualize it by saying, and by that I mean more iconic. And by iconic, I always reference Scott McCloud. You know, when he demonstrates in that first book of his, you know, the Continuum, you know, on the one hand, you have the bare, simple smiley face as an icon. And on the other end of that continuum, you have a photorealistic image. And so, if I call something cartoony, I usually mean something toward the more iconic side of that continuum that McCloud establishes. And so that's what I mean by cartoony, not necessarily that it's simplistic or kids-oriented or even animated-like or anything like that. So, I mean, we try to be as descriptive as possible, but occasionally we will reference a particular – I guess another artist to give a sense of that. But I think that for us on the Comics Alternative, or at least from my experience, is one of the biggest challenges, is trying to translate a visual medium into language on an audio podcast.
Yeah. Square peg, round hole sort of thing going on.
Mm-hmm. And I try to make up for it in some very minor way by including certain images that we discuss in our show notes. But at the same time, I'm aware that the vast majority of people who listen to our podcast aren't going to go online and listen to the show notes, right? They're just going to listen to the show directly from whatever feed that they subscribe to, whether it be Stitcher or Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or what have you. And so just have it directly into their podcatcher and, you know, not even visit our website at all. Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever thought about maybe taking their show into the video podcast realm, or maybe foregoing podcasting altogether and just go straight to YouTube?
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, Derek, really, really crazy talk. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and one of the reasons why I ask that is I think that, again, given the fact that this is largely a visual medium, then visuals could help. And I have watched – they're technically not podcasts because they're on a YouTube channel, and so they don't have an RSS feed. But I have watched videos that usually are shorter than the length of our average shows, all of us. And but they're able to do with the video, they're able to demonstrate the visuals that sometimes with an audio podcast, I think that we may struggle with. And one of the things I used to teach when I was back in Dallas at UT Dallas, like general social media courses and how to write and produce content for social media broadly defined. And one of the things I would tell my students when we got to the podcasting section of the class was, you know, if you want to do something visual with a video, you don't even have to go with podcasts. Why don't you just go straight to YouTube and get a YouTube channel? And there are a lot of people who prefer to consume their media through YouTube than through podcasts anyhow. So now, I mean, I'm a dedicated podcaster, so I would never consider that. But I think if you had a video podcast, for instance, a comics podcast that is in video form, why not just go straight YouTube?
It's actually something I've kicked around. The idea of, I mean, not having like a live video feed, or even not necessarily live, but like a live video feed, like that's not going to happen. No. The anonymity of audio is awesome. In terms of like combining, you know, a visual aspect to what we're sort of talking about, that is really, really appealing. Two things happened. One, it's a whole other sort of stream of work that's sort of required to do that. So you have to sort of figure out logistics and like if we were to add a video element to one of our shows, we would have to talk a lot less because we that's a lot of audio to sort of cover with, you know, visual, even if you're just doing like covers of the comics that you're talking about or inset panels and stuff. The other part of that is I saw Strip Panel Naked, which is a wonderful, wonderful video, I guess, video podcast or video show. And the gentleman's name who puts it on, I can never pronounce his name, so I'm not going to, but just Google Strip Panel Naked. It's fantastic. It's short. It's punchy. He is super smart. It's absolutely great. And I'm like, well, I don't need to do that now because he's really, 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 really good at doing that. And also panel by panel, his like monthly PDF comics magazine and stuff. And I'm sorry. It's like I'm not even going to attempt his name. But seriously, Google panel. It's Panel X Panel or Strip Panel Naked. And they're fantastic. So that sort of scratched the video podcast itch. For quite a while.
For me, the written word was always my first love. You know, that got me into publishing. It got me into reading. And I'm so much more comfortable there than with either video or audio. I'm like, podcasting is far enough outside my comfort zone that I don't even know what I would do with video.
The other question is, and you talked a little bit about, you know, some people prefer to consume through video, but I'm wondering just kind of what percentages that would be. For myself, I listen to a number of podcasts. Not all of them are comic book related, but if I had to sit down and watch them, if they're all video, I would watch far less because I do listen to podcasts while I'm driving. I listen to podcasts while I'm doing other things. About the one episode of Comic Alternative that I actually sit down for is the previews because I had to have my copy in front of me while you guys are going through it. So,
oh, cool.
I sit down with a big tumbler of iced tea and we go through. But so, you know, I know that my colleagues, a lot of them at Nerdy Legion do the same thing. You know, they listen while they're doing other things or it allows them to consume podcasts all through the day. Whereas, if I was doing it on a visual, you know, you have to set time to do that and sit down and you kind of precludes doing anything else.
Yeah. I listen to podcasts in the same ways that you do, Jay. And I never really take the time to watch any video podcasts. And I rarely watch videos on YouTube. You know, and this also comes back to something, Greg, that you had mentioned is that if you do at some point decide to insert visuals into your podcast, so to speak, in some way, whether they be animated or otherwise, then that's a whole other level of production that, you know, whether you have experience in it or not, it's going to take a lot more time. Now, we have on the Comics Alternative, we have a YouTube channel and we have for a number of years. It's easy enough for us to sustain or to populate the YouTube channel because of our host Libsyn. So basically the only thing different that I need to do in order to populate our YouTube channel with, let's say, the latest episode, for instance, the one that just went up today, is to create an image that is, I guess 1400 width and pixel and then 788 height. In other words, the size that would fit into a video, but I don't even have to do that. I mean, I can use an image, a 1400 by 1400 pixel image, and it would be truncated on a YouTube video. So we do have videos of our shows, but it's all still images. And so there's nothing moving. There's nothing animated. It's just whatever cover art I choose to upload into the Libsyn account. And then that image is there while people can listen to the show. Now, you know, I heard there's one podcaster that I listen to a number of podcasts about podcasting, you know, best practices, tips, tricks, things of that sort. And there was one that I was listening to last year and, you know, someone whose opinion I really do respect. He said at one point that he didn't think it was good for audio podcasters to turn their audio into a YouTube video if it's a still image, because people come to YouTube with the assumption that they're going to watch an animated video in some way, right? I disagree with that, because my philosophy with the podcast is I want to go wherever listeners are. And if there is a population that consumes whatever media, you know, audio, video, what have you, via YouTube, then I want to be there even for just those few people who are going to listen to us that way and only that way. And over the past few years, I have found that our subscribers on the YouTube channel that we have has steadily grown, and more people are leaving comments on YouTube than they are, let's say, emailing us or tweeting out to us on Twitter or Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so if you're sitting there watching a video, you know, you're probably either at your device or you're at your keyboard, so it's easier to leave comments, I would assume, because it's like right there, as opposed to if you're listening to something audio, you're in the car. And again, don't text and drive, people. Just do not do. It's tougher for, I'm sure there's an extra barrier for people to be able to go from, oh, that was an insightful comment, or wow, that's a really not good opinion. You know, it's an extra barrier if they're sort of consuming audio podcasts in sort of the usual way of maybe being at work where you can't necessarily do that, or you're, you know, behind the wheel of a large automobile. So, but I think for the video stuff, having for a subject matter that has such a visual element, having a video track to an audio discussion of that is like value added content. So it'd be great to do. I don't see one necessarily cannibalizing the other. And you could logistically sort of figure out, okay, I want to just have, instead of one still image, you know, if Mike and I, we do our sort of weekly pull list, we talk about usually 2 to 4 books during one of those episodes. We could have, you know, let's say a 30-minute episode, the first 7 minutes, we have the first cover, the second 7 minutes, we have the second cover. And then you could sort of, instead of having one static image, you could have like 5. And that's relatively doable if you come up with like a template and you can just drop in images, you know, in and out. But again, you need to sort of build that into your workflow in terms of getting out your, you know, your podcast on sort of a regular basis. And when you have a schedule sort of like Mike and I try to do, that can be a little problematic.
Right. Yeah. And you know, then it becomes a question of, you know, cost and benefit, right? You know, is it worth the extra production work and adding to your workflow for the number of audience members that you're going to get from that particular platform?
Right. But if you really want to do it, it shouldn't stop you from doing it. Like, I mean, certainly Mike and I have done things where like that may not have been the most cost effective use of our time, but we really wanted to have that done or have done that thing. And I'm again, still toying with the idea of having some sort of like video component, but it's either back burnered or maybe inching towards the front burner, but it hasn't quite gotten on the front burner yet. So.
But Greg, 2 podcasts a week is so many episodes.
Well,
2 episodes a week is so many episodes. I don't know how you make time for that.
Well, it's a little sleight of hand. So we do 2 episodes a week, but we record them primarily. We record them in like a 4 to 6 hour chunk on Saturdays. So
that's
we'll do
so time.
It is, and it seemed like a good idea at the time, and it was a good idea at the time, and we just kept doing it long enough that we just got used to it. So it's interesting. Just I work third shift, like during my Monday to Friday job. So whenever I'm recording those episodes, or I guess really any episodes, I'm recording them like Saturday morning, which is essentially my Friday night. So I would essentially work my 8 hours, come home, have like 2 hours, and then podcast for like 6 hours. So I'd be interested to have somebody, one, listen to the show, and if they figure every other week on that 4th episode of the 4-episode cycle, if they notice that I'm getting a little, you know, it's like, Greg isn't talking as much, or he's not quite as insightful as he was 2 weeks ago. It's like, well, you know.
It's because it's sleep deprivation?
Yeah. FYI, I'm on hour 22 of my day, so maybe I can't quite, you know, clearly delineate the difference between, you know, pre-crisis and post-crisis Blue Beetle continuity, you know. not gonna happen. But in terms of sort of building up a, I mean, that was the only way our schedules would work. We actually decided to do that before I sort of went on to night shift work. But that allows us to put out a lot of content, but also it allows us to do, it allows us to be consistent with our schedule. Like we do, you know, like I said, two episodes a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and we've hit that pretty consistently for like the last 5 years, I think. So that's one of the, I know one of the things we wanted to talk on was like longevity and sort of how you sustain these sort of things. You know, consistency is a huge part of it. And that's something Mike is really, really good at, figuring out sort of logistically how we're going to do this. And he was a big stickler of like, you know, we need to hit these marks, just in terms of, you know, showing up when you tell people you're going to show up and being there and having that thing. And then if you have an episode, you're not really that, I don't think we've done like a bad episode, but there have certainly been episodes where I was like, okay, I wasn't necessarily on my game for that one. The good news is that, well, you've got another episode coming up, right? You've got another chance, you know, new comics come out every week. Or every, you know, whatever your release schedule is for like graphic, you know, OGNs and stuff.
It's every Tuesday.
Yeah. So like that machine is not going to stop. So there's always stuff to talk about. So, you know, good news is that if you don't feel you're up to snuff on a particular week, hey, hang on. You've got another week to, you know, to try it again. The bad news is if you were like, man, I nailed that. That was awesome. Like, great. Got to do it again in 7 days. You know, like, oh, or two, you know, or 14 days, I guess, whenever it tends to. So there were like a couple of different points in that little talk. I'm not sure sort of where to go from there, but, or if that even answered the question.
Greg, no, I thought what you mentioned about consistency is important because, you know, people come to expect, you know, any kind of routine. And if there is a schedule where a show comes out, you know, every Tuesday or Wednesday or Monday, or, you know, maybe 2 days a week and it's the same 2 days, then they come to expect that. And if you don't produce, then in some ways you're kind of letting your audience down. And I know over the past several months, up until the past several months, we've been pretty consistent in terms of getting our shows out. Although lately, and I've said this to a few of our co-hosts, it seems as if there's almost a curse with the various Comics Alternative co-hosts and health issues. I know I have had to forego over the past several months some regular episodes just because of my dad's health situation. Gwen, I know that you've had issues with your mother. Paul, when he was helping us to co-host some of the shows last year, you know, he had his mother pass. Our co-host with the webcomic show had to sit out 1 or 2 months because he was hit by a car and it really busted up his leg.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then just recently, the wife of my co-host for the Eurocomic series passed. So it's like all these things seem to be happening almost all at once, and it's like, oh my god, it has affected our output to some degree. But the thing about our podcast is we have so many series going that if we don't get around, let's say, to a regular review show, if we skip a week, there's going to be an interview, or there's going to be a young reader show, or there's going to be a webcomics episode that will be released. So, you know, chances are there's going to be something, and we're right now at an average of about, I don't know, about 15 episodes a month of the show. Yeah, it's a little too much, but we kind of dug our own grave there, but it's fun. I mean, I don't know. I know of a lot of podcasters who love to talk on mic and create the content, but they hate the production and post-production stuff, especially. I love the post-production work. And in fact, if I could do post-production work for other people and make money at it, believe me, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about the labor division in sort of everybody else's podcast, but with Mike and I, again, Mike set up a lot of that stuff, like the here's sort of what our episodes were going to be like our intro music and everything. And he, like, we talked about stuff, but he kind of set everything up. And then over the years, I've been able to figure out how to produce this stuff if I need to. So it's not like, so if we record an episode and Mike says like, hey, I can't put this thing together because of, you know, whatever reason, I can actually do it in terms of like getting it out. So that's helped us, stay on that schedule. One of the other things is now that we just had our 525th episode, I think 525, 526. We have a backlog of episodes. So if it looks like we're not going to be able to hit a particular day, usually the Thursday episodes, the weekly pull list, we really try and have a fresh one every week. We can go into the archives and pull out an interview or a book club discussion, and sort of slot it in. So it's kind of not quite clip show, but it helps. It's a resource that has really helped things lately in terms of having that to fall back on so that we don't skip an episode. And there are discussions that, you know, we still feel are, if not relevant, we're certainly fun. Like, we try and have a bit of a evergreen aspect to most of our shows. So that's something where if you've, you know, done this for long enough, one of the fringe benefits is, hey, you've got stuff you can reach back into and sort of, you know, represent, and sort of hit your deadline and stay visible to your audience without, you know, with hopefully not sort of breaking the flow, quite as much.
It's like the best of Frasier Crane, right? For those of you who watch the Frasier Crane show.
Well, you know, the something, Greg, that you mentioned is division of labor. And, mm-hmm. you know, all of us here work with co-hosts, one or more. And I'm curious how you on your podcasts divide up the tasks, like who does what and how successful that's been.
So with Graphic Novel TK, it's a little different, Greg, than you've been outlining with your podcast, because mm-hmm. we have a very specific arc and a very specific amount of episodes planned. You know, we went into this podcast with pitching a book is going to be the beginning, book sales is going to be the end. It's going to be a chronological progression through that. Mm-hmm. And we might add a few more episodes depending on new things that come up, depending on Q&As, but there's kind of only so much to say about all of this stuff. But the good thing about an interview show is that there's a lot of preparation that happens beforehand, where we have to find the people to do the interviews, we have to come up with questions, we have to brief them on questions and on the podcast. And then even before we record, we kind of sit down and we say, like, this is how everything works. These are the rules. Like, this is a swearing podcast. If you want to swear, it's totally fine with us. You know, these topics are great. This is how much in depth we want you to go through. So I do a lot of that prep work and write the posts, where my co-host Allison does the production. So far, this has worked out as a split. I feel like she is doing the heavy labor, and she is like, I hate emailing people, and so like, I'm doing heavy labor. So I feel like we have a good balance there.
Yeah, really, as long as everybody involved doesn't feel like they're being put upon, you know, everyone sort of does what they're sort of goes to their strengths. I think that's really kind of the ideal, you know, the ideal situation. And it sounds like you are really sort of doing that. You're handling the part that you are really comfortable with. Allison is doing what she is really comfortable with. And, you know, it because you're going to keep doing well, because you have done, you know, a bunch of episodes and you're going to keep doing it, not reducing or eliminating friction in terms of like your working relationships and stuff is super important, because what can be like a little bit of friction early on can obviously sort of get larger as if you aren't sort of in the roles that you're kind of comfortable with. Find like most of the successful podcasts and stuff, everyone sort of figures that out really pretty quickly, and sort of what their roles are.
Yeah. And Allison and I live on the same bus line. So I occasionally go and sit in her kitchen and we're like, okay, how is this going? How are all of our feelings doing about this is working?
Sort
that out.
Yeah, that's really good. Mike and I, so I live in Baltimore. Mike lives in D.C. I'm sorry, he doesn't live in D.C. He lives in Philly. Sorry, Philadelphia. And like we've seen each other a couple of times, and we, you know, so the outside the show communication is there and stuff, but we don't really get a chance to sit down and sort of have that type of powwow. Whereas I was listening to, I think it was your Q&A episode recently, the one that just came out.
One that just came out.
Yeah. So you were both in the same room, obviously, right? Indeed.
Yes, we were.
I would love to do like in-person recording. And I feel like that gives you a better show. And certainly the rapport between the two of you and stuff was really engaging. I really enjoyed that show. I was wondering with everyone else, I mean, does anybody else have that like opportunity to do that on any sort of regular basis? And if you do, do you prefer that or, you know, not prefer that? How do you, I mean, I guess Derek, you have your Heroes location recordings, mm-hmm. and stuff. That's probably, those are probably a blast.
Yeah. In fact, our On Location shows at Heroes is really the only ongoing opportunity that I have to sit down with one of the co-hosts in person and talk with them. So you're right. When Mike and I get together at Heroes twice a month now, we're doing it at the same time. Obviously, we don't use Skype or anything like that. There's only one other occasion where I sat down in the same room with a co-host to record. And that was probably, I think, about 3 years ago. It was my first time at Small Press Expo. So it was 2015. Mm-hmm. And, one of our former co-hosts, he's no longer working with the podcast anymore, Andy Wolverton, who also used to work with Gwen on the Young yes. Reader show. We miss Andy.
We do.
Yeah, he lives not too far from Bethesda or North Bethesda. And so I was staying with him my first trip to SPX. And what we did, I think it was the second night or after the second night of Small Press Expo, is we sat downstairs in his basement. He had a nice little like gathering area down there, and we recorded an episode, basically our experiences at Small Press Expo. Mm-hmm. But that was the only occasion that, outside of the On Location show with Mike now, that I sat down with a co-host. Usually it's via Skype. Because mm-hmm. everybody's all over the place. I mean, Gwen is in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Pascal is in Missouri. Gene, another fill-in co-host every now and again, is in the Chicago area. Same thing with Sean. He's in Chicago. And then Shay, who co-hosts the manga show with me, is back in Texas. So yeah, everybody lives different places.
Yeah. Whereas for me with Graphic Novel TK, Allie and I exclusively record in person with each other, though sometimes we do call people via Skype and record the people we're interviewing on the phone. But because a lot of the podcast is about the publishing industry and we are based in New York, there's a lot of people who are in the publishing industry who are here that we just go to their offices, bring them to our office. They come over to my apartment. They come to Allie's apartment. We find some space to see them in person. And like the episode that we recorded yesterday, which was about cover design, where we talked to Colleen A.F. Venable, who's over at Odd Dot. And she came up to my office and sat down for an hour and a half and talked about how covers get made.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. And it means I get to see Allison all the time, which is amazing because she's really awesome.
Well, Gina, do you find it preferable, maybe more comfortable to do shows where you're all in the same room than having to resort to Skype?
The sound quality tends to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good when you only have like one set of room tone to work with. I recommend that if that is a concern. We also have had the terrible experience. Dave Koyama was kind enough to re-record the episode that she did with us and tell us about her Koyama Press origin story of also becoming very ill and then playing the stock market and then getting enough money to start a comics publisher twice.
Wow.
Time around. She's amazing. So it is, I would say it is safer to do these in person, as well as like technologically easier. But we have great talks with people over Skype too. There's a lot of people who aren't in New York City, or who we aren't seeing at conventions that it's definitely worthwhile to talk to over the internet.
I'm curious, with all of you, what is something that you would like to do with your podcast that you haven't yet gotten around to doing? You know, whether it be something special for a particular episode or maybe even an example that is more ongoing, you know, maybe, you know, different equipment that you would get, or maybe changing the direction of your podcast in any way.
Well, I know that in my part, we really want to interview more children's comics creators, which is something that we haven't done a lot of in the past. And also, one of the things that we're definitely going to do this summer is to do a show live from, or not live, but, you know, recorded at the Children's Literature Association conference. And we're going to try and pull in a number of children's literature scholars who work in comic studies and have them do a roundtable that we'll record all in the same room. So, yeah, Gene, I'm actually really excited about that, too, because it really takes away that a lot of variables when you do that. So that's one thing that those are two things that that I think we really want to do. And part of that is giving our podcast more of a conversational feel. You know, obviously what we're centrally doing at the Comics Alternative in general and on our show is to talk about comics texts from a scholarly perspective. And we love that. But I've really enjoyed a lot of comics podcasts that have come out in the last couple of years. I'm thinking of Colby Sharp's work especially, but that focuses on, at least in part, on interviews with comics creators. And Gina, it sounds like that's something that you're doing in your podcast as well, is just bringing in experts to talk about what they're doing. I think listeners really value that, and that's something that we want to add.
For us with Graphic Novel TK, I feel like a thing that Allison and I should probably get organized to do is some better outreach to comics college and education programs about our podcast and just make sure they're aware of it and kind of figure out if there's ways to kind of be connecting with these students and making sure the podcast is in a good format for them to kind of listen and kind of ingest this understanding of the graphic novel industry that we are trying to assemble for them. But maybe when we get a little further along, like we're not even at the part where the book is finished at this process yet. So maybe we can get there and then do some more outreach.
You know, Gina, I was just thinking when you were talking about this, we teach a course here called Careers in English in the spring. And one of the things that a lot of our students are interested in, you know, would be working in publishing. So I'm definitely going to put your podcast on blast for those students because they will be very, very interested to listen to this industry perspective.
Thanks, Glenn. I appreciate it.
Go ahead.
One of the things that Dennis and I have been talking about, where we'd like to take the direction of our show, we just haven't really done it yet, is we want to get more interviews with creators. We've done a few, and those have gone well, been popular, but I'd like to get more. But it introduces a whole new set of challenges. Now you've got more schedules that you got to coordinate. You know, people like kind of like we had with this podcasts, especially if you got people that are in different time zones, two or three time zones apart. You know, that's adds an additional challenge to people's already busy schedules. So,
yes, thank you all for agreeing to do this at 9 p.m. So, I'm really sorry.
No. This is, after this, I'm going to work. So this was, you know, made sure I was up and, you know, coherent enough to drive in. So, you know, Mike and I set up the show as a vehicle for us to do whatever we want. So in terms of stuff that we haven't done yet, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's like super out there that we haven't already done. I mean, like maybe like a, you know, a special episode of like maybe like an audio documentary on something, like a deep dive into like a particular, you know, subject, maybe get some interviews, clips and put them in there and sort of build that. I think just generally though, I want to do more of what we're doing. I want to get sort of not necessarily out of the weekly grind, but I want to sort of get ahead of my schedule so that we can get back to doing like more book club stuff and more like focused, more, you know, do more interviews and things. Cause again, the build up time for those being able to do just the reading of like, you know, familiarizing yourself with a topic of like an interview person coming in and getting comfortable enough that you can conduct an interview in the way that, you know, the way that I'd like to do it. Also sort of learning how to interview people. Like I'm self-taught for all this stuff. So just being able to, you know, get back to doing, like I said, more book club episodes or more of the less of these sort of extemporaneous type of talking that we tend to do and enjoy, but being able to sort of think ahead a little bit and put a little more, you know, a little more planning into some of these, the scheduling hasn't, our sort of off air lives hasn't really let that, be as easy as it would, as we would like it to be. And personally for me, I want to sort of get back to that so I can, you know, sort of feel like, I'm a little more sort of in control of things, you know. I mean, the comics juggernaut is great in that it's sort of always there when you need it. But if you need it to sort of slow down a little bit, it's like, nope, not doing it. Another Wednesday, new books you got to talk about. Oh, another previews catalog. Did we just do this? Yeah, well, you know, you got to do it again and stuff. But then one of the things in doing sort of a long running show is sort of figuring out, especially if you set up certain like types of episodes, like, okay, we're going to do this weekly pull list episode. Then we're going to do these preview episodes. And it sounds like most of us have like a previews episode type of thing in our rotation, figuring out that the going through previews isn't necessarily about going through that particular catalog and talking about what's in front of you. It's doing that, but it's also using that as a way to talk about sort of what else is going on in comics, which was something I didn't think of when Mike and I kind of agreed to do that. It took me probably like a year or so before I realized, oh, this can be like our news stuff. You know, this can be where we talk about a lot of the things that we use to try and shoehorn into like a news episode or, you know, or this and that. And we sort of chafed at trying to chase what other people's ideas of a comic show, like a mainstream, quote unquote, mainstream comic show should be. And once I figured out, it's like, okay, here's what we're doing. And a lot of these sort of tangents that I want to go on that it doesn't seem like we can have an episode for. Well, that's the previews episode. That's the three and a half hours or whatever you're sitting in front of your previews going through. Like we start the green section, we're going through and, you know, pretty much in the green section, you can find a way to talk about, you know, Toth or, you know, Mung is the purple section, I guess, but, you know, like first, you know, first, second, and you want to talk about like Joe Sacco or, you know, Fantagraphics, all those sort of tangents, man, that's the time to do it. Don't like go through the previews episode, just talk about the books and then sort of complain about, oh, well, I don't have a chance to talk about, you know, No Event Skyver. It's like, well, you need to put those two together and talk about it when you're, you know, on the preview stuff. So it's all sort of an evolving process. And I guess, what I haven't done yet is feel like I've really got a handle on sort of had to do this 520 some episodes into it. You know, it's a learning process, is what I'm saying. Yes.
Well, I know with the Comics Alternative, there are a couple of things that come to mind, as if we needed an additional series. You know, some of our, for us, a former colleague, Paul Lai, has been talking with me about doing a monthly series on the Comics Alternative that we would call Critical Takes. Now, I started this actually last month. I did an interview with Keith Dallas and John Wells about their book, Comic Book Implosion, An Oral History of DC Comics Circa 1978. And I didn't make that part of the interview series because this is a book that I think critically looks at the comics industry in such a way that it's kind of different from the other interviews that we would do with writers and artists. So that was, I guess, the kickoff episode of the Critical Take series. But what Paul and I have in mind, and it all depends on, you know, Paul just recently got a new job. He's had some life changes. And so if he has time for this, fine. But we're thinking about doing a monthly series where we will look at a critical or scholarly work devoted to comics in some way. Like, for instance, something published by University Press in Mississippi, or, you know, other such presses. So that's something that we kind of have our eye on. But I tell you, one thing that I would really like, and it has nothing to do with programming, but it's something that is much more, I guess, software technically based. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but I keep thinking about doing so. I want to get a dedicated app for the Comics Alternative and see what that does with our audience. I know that our host, Libsyn, offers services where they will develop a software app, and that can expand our offerings in certain ways. And I'm wondering if that would be a way to increase our visibility and audience. You know, I've heard from other podcasters who have apps built specifically for their podcast, positive things. And so I'm wondering, though, if that would be something for us. It would cost us a little bit. We can afford it, but I just haven't pulled that trigger yet.
That's interesting. That idea has never come to me. I've never even heard about that.
Well, you know, one of the podcasts that I listen to, a podcast about podcasting, is the Podcasters Roundtable. And about 2, maybe 3 years ago, they did have an episode devoted to this topic. You know, to get an app or not to get an app. Will it help or not? And I think with some people, I think with most of the people on that roundtable for that episode, the opinion was it'll probably help. There's some, though, who thought that it may not as much as you would like for it to. So I don't know. I just haven't pursued that. But yeah, I mean, whether it be through your podcast host or if you know someone who is an app developer, have them do something for your podcast. And yeah, that's definitely a possibility, because it would also be an easier way for people to communicate with you directly. So if they're listening to the show through the app, and all they have to do is to, let's say, press a button to send you a message about whatever it is that, you know, you said in that podcast episode, or if you have a particular call to action, I think that listeners may be more apt to respond because it would make responding easier.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could I mean, I'm sure that's probably a good thing, like, in general. I don't think we're at the sort of level that becomes sort of a viable thing, but yeah, sounds interesting.
Hmm. Well, guys, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gina.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, apps are like destination vacations, right? You have to make sure your destination is exciting enough that people specifically want to go there. Mm-hmm. And not just happen across your podcast by chance or your vacation spot by chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. And, you know, along with that, though, and something that I've heard is it at least doubles, if not more, your exposure. Because think of it this way. How many people go on to platforms like Apple Podcast or Stitcher in finding whatever it is that they may be looking for? compared to how many people go to, let's say, the App Store with Apple, or what is it called on Android? I don't know, where they can go to get apps. Right. And so someone who may not even know much about podcasts at all may stumble upon your podcast through the App Store when they're looking for other things. So,
yeah.
Okay, I have been impressed with the number of things that we've discussed, and of course, there's so much more that we could talk about for International Podcast Day. We've been going though for over an hour and a half, and so maybe we should wrap this up because Greg, I know you have to go to work soon. But before we go, what I'd like for everyone to do is to quickly tell listeners where they can find your podcast.
Graphic Novel TK is hosted on The Beat. And you can find us on Twitter at Graphic Novel TK, and that will link you to all the episodes.
Best of the Rest can be found on the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. That's nerdylegion.com/podcasts/BOTR. You can also get us on Twitter at BOTR Comics.
Robots from Tomorrow is on Multiversity. You can find us Mondays and Thursdays at multiversitycomics.com. We also have our own site, robotsfromtomorrow.com. You can, if you feel up to it, follow me on Twitter at Greg Matasevich. It's GREGMATIASEVICH. Or you can just go to one of the Multiversity episode pages. You just scroll down to the bottom. I've got a hyperlink. I guess if they still call it that, link to my Twitter, whatever, down there. You don't have to type in all those letters. Just hit click and then, you know, you can get in touch with either Mike or I that way.
And the Comics Alternative Young Readers Show is obviously on the Comics Alternative. And Derek is going to give us all the different ways that you can listen to that podcast. I have a joke that I'd like to have someone put in a video of them listening to it on all their different devices. That would be great. But also I'm on Twitter at GA Tarbox, TARBOX. So we often, like whenever we do a show where I will blast it out on Twitter. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Comics Alternative can be found comicsalternative.com, and any feed that carries us, and the major ones do, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, you can find us there. On, you know, we have accounts all over social media. I think the ones that people probably gravitate to most, Facebook, we're Comics Alternative. You can easily find us. And then on Twitter, we're at Comics Alt. It used to be at the number two guys with PhDs, but several months ago, I changed it to something that was a little more appropriate and comic sounding. So, Gwen, Gina, Greg, Jay, thank you all for being a part of this roundtable and sharing your experiences with podcasting about comics, and I hope that all of you have a fun International Podcast Day.
Thanks, Derek.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.
This is Jay again. I hope you enjoyed that presentation. If you'd like to check out the podcasts of the participants, I've listed the names of those in the show notes. If you'd like to contact me with any comments or questions on Twitter, at JayForgets, you can contact my podcast partner, Dennis Chandler, at UTENGR, or you can tweet the show directly at BOTR Comics. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.